Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk from our studios at the Meat House. Now, this week, New Orleans goes into the Big Apple, goes to New York, and the way they've been playing, Dale, I got to tell you, I wasn't exactly sure how good or bad they are. But the Saints go into New York. They start off slow. They were a little bit sluggish, but they ended up in the second half, turn it on, winning that game 30-9. And what was a first half lackluster performance, but then in the second half, things started clicking. Anyway, we'll get to that. But with me today, for the first time on the show, although he's been part of the show as a producer for 2 years, I believe, Dale Mims. Dale, welcome to the show. How you doing, buddy?
All good, Dave. You know, it's good to be on. And I called in a bunch back when we used to have the hotline. And
that's how we
like
met,
that.
Man. That's how we met.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah, so, it's good to be on, baby.
So anyway, grab a drink, sit back and relax, because for the next hour, we're going to be doing New Orleans Saints football talk, BS and beer style.
Hey, folks. All right, listen. I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
Listen, I was talking about we have four games left. And the four games, you have Atlanta, you have Miami, you have Carolina, and then obviously this week we're playing Tampa Bay. The thing about it is I read, and some optimistic fans say, you know what, we could actually get into the playoffs with only two of the four wins. In other words, going 2-2 in the remaining games. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm looking at the standings right now. You know, obviously, one through four is all division winners, the wild cards, because again, it's a new thing. Last year, I think it was the first year, three wild card spots, the Rams, the 49ers, Washington. Okay. Now, the Saints are actually 11th. That's four spots out of the playoffs. But if you want to be optimistic about this, Washington, who is the seventh spot, has the same record as the Saints. The Saints beat Washington. But you start getting into these complicated tiebreakers. So that's one, two, three, four teams that are all tied. I take that back. Five teams tied with the same record. Now, Atlanta is right above us. We play Atlanta. If things start sorting themselves out, we could start seeing some separation where the Saints are now have advantages over a team like Washington. But I think what's going to hurt us, Dale, is that our division record, I take that back, conference record is poor, because all the teams that we lost to that, you know, golly, how we let that one go to the Giants, all those were conference losses.
Yes. I mean, if you just look like right above us, like in the 10th spot, Atlanta, that can come down to the end where we go head to head. And I pray that that's what it comes down to. I would love that so much. But, you know, the game that we dropped against the Eagles, that hurt a lot, you know, because they have the same record as us now.
6-7.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, we got our enemies, the Vikings and everything like that, too. But, yeah, I am glad we did beat Washington. That's a good NFC win for sure. So you never know what ends up happening later on, you know, in the season.
It's just too murky right now to really get a true idea, a true sense of what's going to happen. But here's an analogy I started to tell you about, and I'm going to share with you guys out there listening. I remember when the Saints were trying, you know, were a very good team, and they were trying to get that number one seed, but it usually felt like it was Green Bay, who's very elusive, just staying right on the, you know, the top there, and the Saints were right behind them. And so in the last two or three weeks of the season, I literally recall trying to pull for the Detroit Lions to beat Green Bay. And for whatever reason, at the end of the season, you know, I think, you know, Green Bay's a little tired. They say, you know, your mentality gets, you just roll the ball out there. And particularly, it might not have been last year, but the year before that, if I remember correctly, Detroit was up 14-0 the first half. They up 17-0 in the second half. And while I was starting to feel a little bit like, oh, this could happen, you know, next thing you know, Green Bay wins the game by like 13 points, you know. So the point is that the difference now is we want Green Bay to beat Philadelphia. We want the San Franciscos to beat Atlanta. And those won't be as frustrating because now you are pulling for the better team to pull to beat the weaker team. So, listen, there are opportunities. And again, I'm throwing this out there, and it is a little bit funny how one win against maybe the worst team in the league, yeah, and you talk a little bit more optimistic, right? But
feels good to win, Dave.
Yeah, man, it changes your whole outlook. But the Saints should listen. Okay, I'm gonna preface this. I'm not using should because the Saints can win.
Yeah.
I don't know about Tampa Bay, but the last three games of the season, the Saints can win each and every one of those games. But
sure,
are the Saints good enough to consistently win three times in a row against anyone? And maybe if they were all the Jets, maybe we played the Jets three times, we could do it. But can the Saints go on a run and beat three teams consecutively? I'm not sure.
It's really hard when you've been up and down all year. But I've listened to Sean Payton talk this week, and I mean, he's sounding pretty optimistic because of, you know, injured guys coming back. I'm hoping Ramczyk is going to be ready this next time because he made a big deal about Armstead being back in a lineup and how much that changed the offense. So if we can get both our guys back, you know, maybe this running game is just going to carry us, you know, to where we want to go.
Right. And I agree with you that if the running game can improve, and those all pro players, those guys who are all stars, they absolutely can put the Saints in a position where they can, it opens up the playbook, right? Yes. And we saw it this week. And sometimes you lose sight of the fact that okay, we aren't playing very well, but it's the offensive line. Cause nobody pays attention to the offensive line. Just ask Craig, you know, nobody cares, right? Nobody cares.
Right.
So you're not paying attention to offensive line. There's better offensive line playing. All of a sudden you start making a few more plays. All of a sudden it's like, oh, Kamara's back. And listen, I have him as a talking point. He outstanding. He just looks so good and fluid. We'll get that into a second. But were those holes open for a guy like Kamara to take advantage of because you had the blocking of the way things changed because of Armstead's presence?
Well, I tell you one thing, I did notice a difference when Tony Jones Jr. got the ball. Okay, he met a brick wall like every time. So Kamara's doing something where he's finding a hole some kind of way and he's getting through there. So it's a big difference.
Okay, Heath, the offensive line, all of a sudden Kamara comes back. But when Kamara's not running the ball, Tony Jones Jr., I got to tell you, man, I mean, it's not like he's had a huge body of work, but every time he's been in there, he's been very pedestrian. I mean, I don't know if pedestrian, I might be nice to him by saying pedestrian. He's just not very effective. And so the Saints go and cut Murray and keep to save $1 million or what was it? $2 million. I mean, at some point there's Kamara and there's nothing after that.
Yeah. I mean, I got one word for you. Talent. You know, Kamara just has vision and moves and stuff that Tony Jones Jr. doesn't. And so, you know, you remember, now I'm not saying Kamara is exactly like, but Barry Sanders, right? Barry Sanders played behind some of the worst offensive lines in the history of football, had no tight end, but yet the guy could find openings. And, you know, Kamara has similar ability, and Tony Jones Jr. He runs hard, but he runs kind of north and south and just runs hard in a line. And, well, if there ain't an opening, you know, you get a loss or a yard gain. Or I have to assume that he shows a little better at practice, at least at times, in the Saints. And or it was just a matter of Saints absolutely felt like they needed their $2 million and they were willing to, you know, maybe Kamara, we got Jones and we got Washington and we got to roll with it, you know.
And all it took was a handful of good runs. The same thing that made us think that Callaway was going to be a number one. Well, not me, but yeah, it's preseason. People out there playing vanilla. And next thing you know, he breaks off a couple long runs. He fumbled, but it's like, hey, we tell him to hold on to the ball. He'll be fine. So,
hey, and you know what? And another thing, Washington has started one game for us. He started that Carolina game a couple of years ago, whatever it was, and he rushed for over 100 yards, and we've never seen him again. I don't know if he's touched the ball twice since then, you know? And so it's like, I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I mean,
how the Saints decide on that.
I'll even go as far as saying Montgomery, at least based on the comments that are made, I can't tell because Montgomery doesn't get a lot of touches, but the conversation wasn't like, hey, Kamara's down and so is Ingram, but listen, Tony Jones Jr. is just going to have to step. No, it's like, oh, but, you know, we got Montgomery, and he's going to be able to help us out in this area and that area. Yeah. Oh, I remember when he broke his finger or whatever he did. Once they lost Murray, it changed our running game significantly. I'm like, okay, so everything they're saying is telling me that Jones is not a particularly big part of the offense. Dale, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that preseason tape it fooled us all. I think it got the Saints too. And that's why they were willing to, you know, don't get me wrong, they want the cap space, but that's why they were so willing to make the move to let go of Murray.
Yeah, I think that it was a situation where it was more about cap because, or maybe he said is, look, there's things going on in practice. You know, maybe the guy's picking up blitzes and doing different things, the little things that we don't see. But when it comes to just being a pure running back, I remember after he won the job, I said, man, let me go look a little bit more into this guy's background and start seeing the things that make me say, wow, he ran a slower 40, but man, his lateral movement was pretty damn good. And all the numbers that I saw from the combine or from his pre-draft workouts, they weren't very impressive. So I'm like, what is it that people hang their hats on that says that he's going to be that guy? And I just don't know what it is because he's not powerful guy.
I remember hearing Zach Streif even comment on Tony Jones saying, like, this guy is going to be good whenever he gets his opportunity. And I'm not seeing it, you know, when the lights are on for real. So,
okay. So now we'll stay at running back, but we'll switch gears. And we brought up Kamara a little bit earlier. And if he's not the straw that stirs the drink, I'll get those words in the right order here anytime now. I think he did prove that his absence was, and you can tell it's okay. Fans will try their best to convince themselves that whoever the next man up is going to do it. But then again, we just talk about Tony Jones Jr. You run left, you gain a yard, you run right, you lose 2 yards and nothing. And you just say, well, man, they really stopping the run today. Then all of a sudden, when you don't have it, it's like driving that car. It's like, you know, you got the newer car, you know, and you drive your wife's little car. It's low to the ground, and it feels like it's just kind of, you know, clanking around. You get back in your car, and you're like, whoa, man, this is just – and that's what Kamara was. You just saw it was – this is not even close. It's a world of difference. Any thoughts?
It was clear that Taysom Hill was like the second back yesterday. I mean, well, Sunday in the game. Because, I mean, he was clearly the second most effective runner behind Kamara. Because, you know, they put Tony Jones in. It just didn't happen. He got a couple of, you know, passes that made a difference. But that's about it.
Yeah. Heath, the difference. Okay. So maybe I'll put it this way. We got Armstead back. Things start to seem to work a little bit better. I remember several good runs off the left side for Kamara where he kind of went in there, kind of like he almost hid for a second and bounced it. And I want to say outside because he really just – it was kind of like he hid between the tackle and the guards and just shot between that gap, you know, half a second of hesitation. Yeah. And so is it Kamara? Is it Armstead? Is it a combination of both?
It's both. I mean, obviously having Armstead back, you had a better version of the line than you have without him. And then Kamara, you know, like we said before, he just has a patience and a vision that somebody like Tony Jones doesn't. You know, he runs over to that side and he's almost like he's jogging and he kind of waits a minute and he gets in a position where I guess he knows where to get because I don't think the defensive lineman can see him. And then as soon as a little bit of that gap opens up, He turns it on and he's gone, you know, and he just glides. And it still doesn't even look like he's running that hard when he's running full out. But it's just that glide, you know. And whereas on, you know, on the flip side, Tony Jones Jr. takes a handoff, runs full speed. The hole isn't there yet. He runs in the back of one of his offensive linemen. Guys tackling, you know. And look, Tony Jones was productive at Notre Dame. I don't know if it's still a matter of when he gets into games, it's that, you know, he just doesn't have the speed of the NFL. Like, you know how they always say, you know, he's not used to the speed of the NFL or whatever. It's not like the guy's never been productive as a running back. He had a pretty productive career at Notre Dame. So, I don't know. But it's a combination of both is the short answer, you know.
Well, as we bring up Teron Armstead and his return to the lineup, one of the things that that I want to first point out is that Hurst, I think he has done a great job. Now, what I have learned with guys like Hurst and Armstead is that Hurst, he's doing the job. He's getting the job done. He gets in the way. Armstead will take his man, throw him out the way. And again, I exaggerate a bit to make a point, move him out of the way and then create a hole and you go through. So when you see the relationship, when you see the contrast between the two, you really see why one guy, because again, I'm trying to point out that when Hurst is in there, I'm thinking, man, you know, there's a lot of talk about Armstead not coming back next year because of his cap and the injuries. But then when he's out and he comes back in and then you compare him to Hurst, you realize the difference. Hurst is a backup, a solid right tackle, maybe just that, you know, hey, man, we can make it through with him. You know, again, you talked about Streif a little bit ago. I think a guy like him who, you know, he doesn't give up a lot, but he's not really going to open up big holes for you. So now, I mean, again, this is saying all this without consideration to the salary cap. I mean, can we let Armstead go? I mean, Dale, can we let him go?
No.
Simple answer.
I mean, we've got to find a space. I mean, I know the Saints are cap gurus and everything like that. They can figure it out. I just don't see it happening because of the way Sean Payton talked about him this week. I mean, it's such a glaring need when he's not in there and he makes such a big difference to the offense as a whole. Like he's very, very important. So he's not going anywhere.
Well, and that's the funny thing is that we hear these little rumblings and if I'm not mistaken, usually Wesley has this kind of, I think he's the one who corrected me about it one time. I think that Armstead is going to count double digit millions. I think 12 million, whether he's with the team or not with the team. So yes. I don't know what you gain by it. Now, if you trade him, at least you would gain a draft pick, but he's not under contract. So you chances of trading him is next to nothing.
Right.
You know, to sign him and then trade him would make, I really doubt that's even something that would be even a consideration. So I don't know why I just said that, but anyway, the fact of the matter is if he's going to cost you the same, why don't you get a couple more years? I do believe the man still has a few years left in him and he's a warrior. He gets injured a lot, but he's a warrior. He fights through and he comes back and Heath, what do you do? What do you do, Heath?
Well, you keep him based on what you just said. You know, if that is the case, and I know Wesley brought that up before, I haven't looked at it myself, but I believe it,
Well, we heard on the internet, so it's got to be true.
Yeah, of course. You know, so you just keep him. You know, you certainly don't pay him the same amount or damn near the same amount to not be on a team. Now, that said, if his contract wasn't structured that way and they were able to create a big savings by letting him go, the Saints may get into a position, not because they'd want to, but where they just simply have to.
Right.
Especially if you weigh it against the amount of games that he winds up missing from injury. I could see us where they could get into a situation where he say, hey, you know, we might try to move Ramczyk to the left side and either let the young guy from Kentucky, I can't even think,
Young
turn.
Yeah.
Or Hurst, you know, one of those guys start at right on the right side. You know, Hurst has been a starter in the past. He's a quality backup. He's a serviceable guy at the very least. You could do worse by having him start on the right-hand side.
You could do worse with Hurst
There you
I
go.
Like it. That's our motto.
The
like,
whole thing works out, man. Get rid of Armstead. This is just too perfect. It all fits.
Right, right. Well, like you were saying, is there somebody who rhymes with somebody who's a top pick in the draft? I mean, you can do worse than hers. That's our motto.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's nobody in the draft that rhymes with suck or tanker.
Right, not this year anyway. So, well, one of the things that I have to put some context into is that is Ryan Ramczyk, this offseason, there's a lot of talk about how there's incentives in his contract escalators that if he plays left tackle, and I don't think that was just for no reason. I don't think that they just said, you know what, if you play tight end, we'll give you an extra $2 million a year. You know, they had an idea that there might be a reason to move him over there. And the other context that's left out of this is like, hey, he makes the same money whether he's here or there. If they keep him, I guarantee they will restructure so that $12 million that he's going to be owed now will not be $12 million next year. More than likely, it'd be one of those things where he's down to $4 million next year, and then it'll be, you know, $16 million the year after that, and a third year where by the time it's his fourth year, we'll owe him $168 million on the back end of his contract. Sure. So, again, it's just context to say there's – I brought that up as like, hey, you pay him if he's here or there, so what do you do? Well, hell yeah, you got to keep him. But there's more to it than that that we're probably not aware of at this point. Dale?
Well, he's 30. And I'm also hearing that when rookies come into the league, they're contacting Armstead and he's helping to work them out,
like
train
mentoring them. Mentoring them and stuff.
Yes. Yes. So if you got a guy that's that important, like you can't just let him walk away.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think the selling point, again, it's a contradiction because the Saints writing contracts to make their other all pro guy, the left tackle. And, you know, but there could have been more than a 1 year plan. It could have been like, hey, man, this is a long 5 year deal. By year three, you might be moving to left tackle. So there's opportunity. The other thing is, yeah, he's still a good player. He's not old, especially offensive lineman. 30 years old is not an old offensive or old player for an offensive lineman. Those guys will play 34, 35, 36 if they're the right type. Now, I don't know if he's that guy because, again, his body doesn't seem to be the type of body that holds up. So, but if you know that when he signs a contract, it's not going to be, and I keep using the number 12. I don't know if that's accurate, but it's in the ballpark. That won't be 12 next year. And so, hey, Armstead, let's redo this contract, get you down to about 4 next year. Because the one thing about the salary cap mess that we're in, the new contract, and I've been hearing about this, so I'm going to talk about it like I'm the expert. And, I understand the cap. I'm talking about when this new money's coming and how big it's going to be. I thought it was going to be this year. Then it's like, oh, well, no, it's next year. Then I'm not even sure when this new contract's coming in that's going to change everything so we can make up for all that COVID loss that we had last year that put us in this bind to begin with. So let's move on. An interesting stat that I came across. The New Orleans Saints is your NFL leader offensively in scoring in the fourth quarter. Now, that to me is, you know, it's not really a surprise, but I do think some context can be added. Now, we didn't even get into Taysom Hill and the game a whole bunch. At this point, we try to, you know, talk more about the Saints in general than just specifically the game. But it kind of shows that, look, everybody's like, oh, well, there's truth to it. Trevor Siemian's over there. He's throwing all this stuff. He doesn't do nothing until the fourth quarter. Well, yeah, but the other guy's not doing nothing. In the fourth quarter, they still don't do nothing. So there's something to be said that, yes, it's easier to throw the ball with when you're losing, when you're down pretty big. The defense will give you a lot of stuff, but you still got to take advantage of it. All right, moving forward, the Saints are leading the league in scoring. I'm going to start with you, Dale. I mean, this is a juggernaut offense, and they have to find a way to keep it together.
I mean, you can look at the
You're not even going to laugh at me for that comment. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. You just make me look like a fool. Like, you just act like I'm serious. Go ahead.
I got these things in my mind, Dave. Got to get them out, all right?
Trying to get focused on what you're going to say. Okay, I got you.
So, even this game, like, the Saints scored 17 points in the fourth quarter, you know? And, like, the other three quarters, it's a total of, what, 14 points or something? So, it's not much. So, I don't know what it is about this fourth quarter, man. We start getting everything rolling and we make it happen.
So Heath, I mean, so we got to keep, we can't break this offense up. I mean, it's leading the league in scoring in the fourth quarter, clutch time, the time when it matters. The Saints are just throwing up points. Nobody can stop them.
Yeah. We just need to talk the clock operator into putting fourth quarter on the little thing, right. All four quarters. We'll be rolling.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it is, man. It's like, and you're right. It wasn't just Simeon, Simeon, we had guys dropping passes for the first three quarters, and all of a sudden they look like they all pro receivers, in the fourth quarter. Troutman, the fish. All of a sudden, in the fourth quarter, this dude's going up in the air with a 40-inch vertical leap and pulling balls down. He couldn't catch one, right to the numbers 5 feet away in the first three quarters. I don't know. I guess when you combine desperation with a loosened-up defense, you get all that underneath stuff. It starts to look a lot better. But, hey, the Saints, they're scoring the points, right? That's the difference. You could say, okay, well, the defense is going to give you all those easy yards and all, but they get the ball in the end zone, and the Saints lead the league in red zone scoring, ironically enough.
Oh, yeah, that was another one.
All the struggles that they have, once they get in the red zone, they're the best in the business. So it's like it's really hard to figure this team in so many ways this season. I really have no idea how to explain any of that.
I'm okay. So I think one of the things that I used this offseason, I said, look, man, our defense is going to be this. The defense is going to be that. I looked at the offense and I was like, but I said, the default, Sean Payton's going to figure it out. Sean Payton knows what he's going to do. He's going to find a way to make it happen. And then I got one. I'm like, hey, listen, man, I don't care who you are, man. You're not going to score points if you don't have talent. But there are little things that show you that while we dropped off in many areas on offense and haven't been productive, there are other areas where the Saints, red zone, where it's obvious that coaching is a factor, play calling, the way they execute the offense, the design of the offense is leading to opportunities to score in the red zone. And that's with Jameis Winston, who, we also have to acknowledge historically, I mean, the guy gets such a bad rap in so many areas. And then when you start pulling up these stats, it's almost like, golly, man, I thought he was horrible, sucked. He's terrible. All he does is throw interceptions. I mean, he's a turnover machine. And then you're like, but he's one of the best, if not the best, in the last few years at red zone efficiency. So I don't know what all this means. I do know that it still means the Saints offense isn't very good. But it does show me that, or at least I believe it means that Sean Payton is still designing an offense, but there's just still missing playmakers, Dale.
I wonder why it doesn't translate into 2-point conversions being converted.
I see what you did there. It's true.
Certainly
doesn't. And 1-point, like 1-point conversions too, Dale. I mean, the kicks, man, are Sean Payton's play calling is obviously suffering when he puts a kicker in the game after we score a touchdown. It's just ineffective.
Definitely.
So I'm going to blame that on him too. See, Dale, I like this about you. You're the only guy I say something stupid and everybody rolls their eyes at me and you give me that laugh and I appreciate it. He does the same thing in our group. He gives me the LOL. Everybody else is like, oh my God, Dave, be quiet, man. So I appreciate you, man. All right. So let's move on a little bit and talk about Tampa Bay. I could sit here and list off all the stats, all the things that happened in the last three games the Saints played in the regular season. I could do that if I actually looked them up and had that information. I could totally read them off to you. But I don't believe, listen, I'm sorry. People are like, hey, we did it before. We did it last time. The Tampa Bay Bucs are a good team. I do think that we have seen a more effective offense with Taysom. It's not pretty, but it's definitely more entertaining. And it's more effective. We converting some of those third downs and keeping drives alive. It's less just flat out three and outs. But I think the Saints are going to have their hands full because they will not be able to just run the ball and play tough defense and beat Tampa Bay. Heath, I mean, I don't want to say what's the keys to victory, but I just don't think they'll be able to do it the way they've been doing it and be successful.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, right? It'll be a tall order for this team to be able to go into Tampa and beat the Buccaneers right now. Now, that said, the Saints seem to play Tampa pretty well, almost no matter, what the situation is. I mean, hell, we beat them more times, out of the last half dozen or whatever it is. So I try to stay positive, We'll try to channel some of Craig here who isn't here with us today. But, First of all, it's the defense is going to have to play lights out, right? They're going to have to be on top of their game to give us any chance. Offense, all of the usual things. They're not going to be able to turn the ball over, which, you know, that's the one thing with Taysom at quarterback, and it is almost more likely to fumble it, especially with the hand the way it is right now. We saw it this week. He went back, throw the ball. Ball comes out of his hand. That's been a problem for him throughout, you know, his time here. But I don't know, Dave. Great defense. Keep the ball out of the hands of Brady. Don't turn the ball over, right? The cliche, right? All the things you always hear. Is it possible? I don't know. Maybe. Who knows? Craziest shit's happened, I guess. I don't know.
Dale, there's a part of me that wants to say some teams just match up right with other teams. But I just don't see how that applies. Like, I can see where you say, man, the Saints defense really matches up with Tampa Bay's offense and keeps them in the game. But I promise you the Saints aren't going to run the ball as effectively against Tampa Bay, especially without the threat of a pass. And it's not just Taysom. In the game against the Jets, I've seen it the last several games, the defense just is not threatened by our receivers. So, you know, we can go into this thing where, oh, they're not doing this and they're not doing that. And the quarterbacks, at the end of the day, they're stacking the line of scrimmage and they're saying, I'm not worried about you throwing the ball and I'm not worried about your receivers beating me. So now what are you going to do? So, well, how do we do it? How do we generate enough offense?
Well, it's concerning just seeing that Tampa has their corners back.
Yes.
So that frees up the safeties a lot more. But, I mean, just kind of going back to the last game, I mean, we managed to score points early. And to me, like, that has to be the key here. We have to score points early so that way you're not trying to come from behind in the fourth quarter. So I do agree, like, the offense looks a lot better. I just have more hope looking at Taysom.
Right. No, absolutely.
The field a little bit. Like, it just feels better. Don't get me wrong. It's not pretty, you know, but I think Taysom can pull off some stuff. Vannett has been, he's been nice. Don't get me wrong. He's not Jimmy Graham out here.
I understand
here, right?
What you're saying. I agree with you.
But he does your play. He throw the ball to the tight end. He's a big guy. He catches it. Like that's what
you expect, right? Just, I mean, I don't care if you rumbling down the field for another 30 yards.
Yeah.
Catch the ball, get a first down, and go back to the huddle. I'm good with it. You know, Hovey Brenner, right, baby? Just make the catch.
That's all we need is Hovey.
Fall down and let's go back to the huddle, run another play.
Right.
All right. Heath, Dale, I'm at a loss here for any more
kicking.
Kicking?
You want to talk about our kicks?
Okay, okay, thank you. You could have mentioned that during production. I could have wrote it down and not had, but okay. Where was this guy early in the year, particularly against the Titans, where we could have literally stole another game, if that's what you want to call it? There are some games I don't subscribe because I hear it way too much. Well, if we wouldn't have fumbled, and if we would have made those two extra points, and if we wouldn't have ran the kickoff back and fumbled, then we would have won that game. Now, come on, bad teams fumble and they miss. But that's the one game where you say, man, if you just make two extra points, the Saints could have easily pulled away or pulled that game out. And I all of a sudden, you know, how does anybody who kicks in the NFL, I watch college football and these guys make field goals all the time. It's easy. I mean, rarely do I see misses. Now, someone pointed out to me the goals. I didn't even realize this is sad. The goals are wider in college, and I'm like, yeah, they are, aren't they? So it's easier, but I don't see them missing extra points in college.
Yeah, but the hash marks are so much wider in college. So you got these weird looking angles,
yes,
on these shorter kicks and stuff like that. I still think, you know, it's still kicking, you know, and what does a kicker do all day? Like, are they in their game planning?
Right.
You know, like they may game plan like an onside kick or something like that, but yo, all they do all day is kick, 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 kick. Make the kicks, man.
Yeah. Heath, you have anything profound to talk about our extra point situation?
No, not really. I mean, you know, but speaking of, what I will say, I'll expound on that whole thing is the special teams, right? It's always been a big part of the Saint, strength of the Saints over the last, God, number of years now. The one letdown has been the kicking. And like Dale said, this week we made all the kicks. if we have any chance at beating Tampa, we'll have to have a repeat performance of that. The one area where we didn't do so well this past week that the Saints usually excel at, it was kick coverage. Berrios got quite a number of decent returns. Now, they're talking about he's potentially going to make the Pro Bowl, so he's obviously been doing that to a lot of people. But that was a little bit disappointing. You know, it's funny. The Saints have been so good in special teams in every area outside of kicking this year with Lutz missing. But when they give up a return on a punt of 15 yards or something, I'm going, what the hell's wrong with these? You know, like you really, it's surprising. If Gray hasn't hit the guy within 6 inches of him catching the ball, it's shocking, you know. And so, but anyway, next week, let's get back to covering those kicks a little bit better.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. And you wonder, okay, what happened? And sometimes it is that your starters, get injured, your backups who are your core special teamers start getting some snaps. And then, but I have just the one guy who never disappoints though is that punter. I mean, Gilligan's Island is a thing. Yeah. I mean, the guy dropped another one. If I recall, maybe it's more than one, but at least one that I was like, yeah, dang, there we go again. Just dropping them inside the five, you know? So,
I wonder who's responsible for getting him.
Well, they should give that guy some kind of raise or something,
right?
You know, so hopefully it's not with Kyle Hartley. No, who's the guy that went over to Atlanta? If it's him, then we have to be up. No. I'm talking about the GM, Atlanta's new GM.
Yeah,
that guy.
That guy.
So anyway, So I don't know, man, because he picked a good punter. But anyway, Dale, any last thoughts?
I'm glad to see Chauncey back because covering the slot against Tampa Bay is going to be really important. Brady loves the middle of the field, whether it's throwing to Gronk or throwing to Godwin. So if we could take away Godwin, that helps a lot. And we've got to figure out Gronk now in that middle of the field.
Yeah. Heath, any final thoughts?
Well, when no Lattimore will show up, he's getting ready to go up against his favorite guy. He gets pumped up when it's time to face Chris Evans. You know, like I said, man, the defense is going to have to come and bring it this week. They're going to have to be at their best. Keep it respectable. You know, can the Saints pull off a win? I doubt it.
Yeah, I just can't see how they're going to do it. Like my point is,
it's tough, man.
It's funny how a win, regardless of who we're playing, just changes your mood, but it hasn't really changed my outlook. You know, it's like I'm like, oh, we're injured. Well, you know what? We're starting to get some of those injured players back. You're getting Kamara back. You get, you know, Armstead back. And there are more. There was other guys. You know, there was yet another rag doll by my guy, Marcus Davenport, where he just takes a guy and throws him, offensive tackle, just throws him away. And so these guys are coming back. They're making the Saints a better team. And so maybe I need to realize that even though I'm down on them and the excuse you've heard me give over and over in every show the last month is, look, this isn't even the Saints, but maybe I'm not paying attention. It's starting to be the Saints. And then what happens? You start playing a little bit better. So the one thing I will be interested in, I think the Saints will be competitive. I do think their defense matches up. And if they can somehow find a way to score some points, it's just still Taysom is not a great passer and he has no targets to really throw to. You know, Dale mentioned that those cornerbacks that has been Achilles heel of Tampa all season is the injuries in the secondary. They're coming back. And so it's going to be a tough road to hoe. Anyway, that's all the show that we have for you guys this week. So for Heath Elson-San, Dale Mims, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast. And we'll talk to you next week after we hopefully see a Saints victory over Tampa Bay. Y'all take care.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time. Podcast. We have a lot of fun.
I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast.